When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Like, football hasn't changed. Like, this thing called the half space, it's a space running it. If it's occupied, go and run somewhere else. Like, let's not overcomplicate coaching.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
Right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and today I've got a very special guest with me. My guest today is Steve Salas. Morning, Steve. How are you?
Good morning. Very well. Thank you for having me.
Brilliant. Steve, just before we get cracking, obviously, you know, new guest on the Coaches Network, and, you know, there's plenty of people out there may recognise you and some may not. For those that don't, would you mind just going into a bit of detail around who you are, what you do, and how you've got to where you got to today?
Well, firstly, thanks for having me again. I mean, I've probably said this on about 8 million podcasts, and I should probably just have a script of what I do. But I call myself a failed footballer on Twitter. And Dave Rainford, who works for the Premier League, always says to me, Steve, why do you call yourself that? Like, that's quite self-deprecating. But I think it's important to know that, like, I work with people that played against Ronaldo in an FA Cup final. So if they can do that, then I'm nowhere near them. So I sort of, yeah, my journey really was starting at Brighton. I was there for 8 years, got released at 19, went to university. Was the only footballer of my generation to have any A-levels. So moved from Brighton to London at Greenwich. Did a degree in physical education with teacher status. Really, this was the bit that made me, yes, to be honest. I worked in 4 failing Inner London comprehensives, worked my way up from PE teacher to head of PE, was a head of year, assistant head, and then a vice principal. So the reason I'm obsessed with strategy in football is because there's a massive gap in strategy, as we both know. And really, that was my skill set. And then talk about karma, I think. An ex-pupil changed my life. And everyone always says, well, what did he do? And he texted me and he told me about a job at Millwall. And I've lived in South London for 20, 25 years. So we always say teachers' jobs are to change kids' lives. But he changed my life. So his name's Chris Ether. He'll like another mention because he always gets pleased when I mention him. But he texted me and he said, have you seen the job at Millwall? And I don't support Millwall. I've never gone down there. So I applied 2 days late, thinking I've got no hope. It was the time where I really needed a change. I was just finishing my master's degree as well. And I was about to go and do my head teacher's qualification. So I was very, very close to, you know, rolling into the education sort of world. And it was a head of education player welfare job as part of the academy management team. And I'll to be honest with you, if I hadn't told my current boss at Millwall at the time that I wanted to be given free rein to lead my skill set, I wouldn't have taken the job. But he was pretty open to my skills. And, you know, as you know, there's massive gaps. And I took that job. And then after 4.5 seasons, which I absolutely loved, I had an opportunity to work for the FA. So for the England under 15s. Now, the next stage was, as you know, we were part-time. So it was only 40 days a year. And then the next thing I'm saying is, well, do I want to regret that for the rest of my life, not working with the country's best players? So I basically took the biggest life gamble and found a job for 315 days a year, 325 days a year, which was my business. So it sort of all revolved into that. Now, the final story to this really is that my business is called solutionsmindset.com. And the truth of it is, Yaz, that I had a vice principal office with vice principal on it, but I over the vice principal's badge, I used to have police come to my office with a solution, not a problem, because I was just dealing with crap all day. And I wanted to reframe teachers thinking that they would come in and not give me more hassle, and then reframe kids thinking and not coming and give me more hassle. So the business title was so natural to me to call it that. And then here I am now just sort of talking to you and just scamming my way through business.
Excellent. No, I really like that. Look, I want to start right there then. You know, at the top of that, you said that your skill set was about strategy. I want to talk a little bit more about that and get, you know, really help the listeners and the viewers identify what you mean by that. So just from your perspective, what exactly do you mean by strategy, and how do we go about, you know, achieving a good strategy within an organization such as that?
I think it's really interesting. The people that know me well and have worked with me see a different side to me. For example, at the moment, I'm not always very respectful to the football industry, because I'll say how it is, and that's not likable to people. But let's go back a step. In the last 18 months, Yaz, football's given itself a massive pat on the back and saying, wow, look, we've got a sporting director. Oh, fantastic, look at us. And I just find it embarrassing, because football should have done this 35 years ago. And so that's the first thing, is that when I'm talking about strategy, football has no strategy. Football's never had any strategy. Now football's saying, oh, look at what we're doing. So like, well, that's not appropriate. Now, football is making massive changes, and it still needs to make significantly more changes. But what I mean by strategy is, without strategy, you can't change a school. Without strategy, you can't change a business. And without strategy, you can't change a football club. So there was, I'll sidetrack slightly. There was something in the press last year, managers not doing enough about player welfare. Okay, fine. That's someone's opinion. But it's not the manager's issue. It's the CEO's issue. It's the club owner's issue. That has an ethical and moral stance to duty of care for their staff. They are not putting people in place, like myself, at first team level as compulsory standard of practice. It's got it at academy level, but it hasn't got it at first team level. And obviously, I've got 20 Premier League and Championship clients one-to-one that I speak to. Why are they having to come to me, and why are they not at the clubs?
I think, you know, definitely a key point that you've made then. I think, you know, just take it back to the top there. It should be obviously, more prevalent across all the clubs. But I want to bring you back to one of the first points you mentioned. You said football doesn't have a strategy. Why do you think it's taken this long for them to start thinking about these sorts of things just generally across the football industry? Because, I mean, there's a lot of clubs still out there that still haven't put these things in place.
In my new book, I've got a few golden gems in there, and I'm going to share this with you. This is the first person I'm going to share this with, and it's called agnotology. And agnotology means the study of cultural induced ignorance. And the problem with football, it's institutionalized just by itself. Right, because we've got the same thinking, the same behaviours, the same people, the same types of people, not enough diversity. So we've just got the same thing. Now, as you know, diversity comes in many different forms, right? But my lens, coming from an educational background, there's a few people that have always achieved, you know, first team managers have come from teaching, Dan Ashworth's come from teaching. So there's a lot of people historically that have, but there's still not people in the right positions to give football a new lens on the world, and we all see the world differently, but also new, more dynamic processes, new, more dynamic pedagogy, new, more dynamic research-based methodology, which means that we can come from evidence rather than opinion. And I suppose because I'm so opinionated, people often miss my pedagogical toolbox. So I think that agnotology is the game changer. Because if we've always got a lens on, am I being ignorant here? Is our behaviour ignorant? Is our culture ignorant? Is our institution ignorant? And so we're always in that headspace of education. So I think that, yeah, that it's been like that because there's never been anyone new. And if they have, they would have been probably blown out of the water, because they were seen as anarchic. So yeah, I think it's that institutionalized by itself.
No, it's interesting you said it, because I think it's almost like when you're trying to go against the grain, people aren't going to take to that well. You know, as you say, it has been institutionalized to where there is a quite a strict one way of thinking, and it's been like that for so many years. But I think as time's gone on, we're starting to kind of lean on the other fields that can lend their support to the sport industry in particular, obviously within football. So, you know, coming back to type of work that you do with those players, what does that look like? So, you know, what would a player in the first team environment reaching out to someone like yourself be looking for?
That is a good question. Variable things. Lack of form. So I'm going to sidetrack slightly. I split this into professional, personal. So at the start of every session, I say to my clients, do you want to talk about something professional, or do you want to talk about something personal, or do you want to talk about both? And the reason I say that is because 9 clients out of 10 come to me for lack of form. Now, why do they come to Steve Salas for lack of form? I've got coaching experience, I've got teaching experience, I've got pastoral experience. And as we said off air, I'm not a sports psychologist, but I've got a degree in physical education and I've got a master's degree in educational psychology and leadership. I've also got 35,000 kids in the bank of working with pastoral support. So I think I'm in a very strong position to support people in football. But the actual interesting thing I think that your listeners will know is that often these players come to me and they say, I'm not playing well, right? And then after about 40 minutes of session one, through really informal talking therapy, just like we're talking now, very informal, often it will be something in their personal life which is affecting them on the training ground or affecting them in performance. But all my work is around self-awareness, yes, right? So it's in their blind spots. And probably, yeah, 9 players out of 10 have probably got something going on at home, relationships, lack of confidence, inability to communicate with managers. All of this conditioned behavior from childhood gets to adulthood, and then this manifests itself into poor form. Well, my job is to join up all the dots, create a story, create a pan, create a cog, create a methodology for us to start making 1% gains. So very, very common sense approach. I think that will be section one. When it gets down to session 4, 5, and 6, I'm doing rag ratings, red, amber, greens, tech, tap, fizz, and psych. Players are leading it. My youth athletes are doing presentations to their parents on Zoom with a PowerPoint, and it's methodical. You know, the parents are loving my work because I'm bringing something like rigorous to the process. You know, it's like a school, and that's the teacher in me. So I think, again, very bespoke to my clients, very individual. Some clients want me to help them like with a quick punch and a quick nudge and something quick. Some clients, I coach. Now, if I know I've got a longer term with a client, if I know I've got 2 to 3 months with a client, I can change my style to coach, which then enables them to find solutions themselves over the medium and long term. So yeah, very literally, there isn't an answer to how, it's more a case of what their requirements are.
No, really interesting that, you know, and you, as you're talking, a lot of that resonates with me, because in the way that I actually coach and work with my players, you know, people often ask me, well, what's your philosophy? I say, well, I don't really have a playing philosophy, but I do have a coaching one. And the coaching one is I want to work with my players in a way that I can help them achieve or get to a point of interdependence rather than fully dependent, because, or fully independent rather, in that if they become fully independent, we're leaving them to their own devices and they're just going to crack on with it. But there's always going to, as you said, there's going to be blind spots. Whereas if you're interdependent, in my opinion, and the way I look at it is almost right, you've got the competence, you've got the confidence to actually go and do these things alone. However, we've supported you in developing your social and psychological skills that you can actually then reach out to others where necessary, recognizing that you might need support, recognizing that you have some information that you want to offload, and be confident enough to share that information or probe on those questions or queries that you may have. So that self-awareness piece is a massive part of the way I kind of work in my coaching. Now, for me, it's about developing a player who can not just be more conscious about what they're doing, but also what they're thinking and how they're feeling about different things. Now, how alike or how different is that from your perspective, what the self-awareness piece is for you in your way where you work with the people that you work with?
It's not, listen, what you've just mentioned why are we doing what we're doing? How are we doing it? What are we trying to achieve? And my work, as I know we just met recently, but it has as many questions as it has answers. And the reason it has is because I can't have all the answers. I spoke to a player last night, championship youth teamer, very, very bright, X factor bright, almost getting lost in the system because he challenges everything. Coaches see him as defiant. It's incredible. He's hyper-intelligent, this boy. He's seen as disruptive. He just wants to know. He's inquisitive. And the nice thing about my work is that when the agent called me and said, Steve, this kid, and I've known the agent 30 years, he said, this kid was like you at the same age, which is probably an indirect compliment, right? And I'm like, what do you mean? He just said he's like, just wants to know everything about everything and wants to challenge about why, but he's not a bad kid. He's perceived as bad. Now, that's another classic example of football where football coaches know loads about football, right? Like 11v11, not in a rude way, yes. I said this on a million podcasts. That's the easy bit. Like, football hasn't changed. Like, this thing called the half space, it's a space running it. If he's occupied, go and run somewhere else. Like, let's not overcomplicate coaching. But what coaches traditionally don't know is about strategy, leadership, emotional intelligence, soft skills, kindness, empathy, sports psych, educational psychology. Like, the list goes on. So the FA, Scottish FA, I bless them, obviously working with them now. All of these coaching courses are just so coaching heavy. Now, I know coaching has moved on. I know it has. It'd be foolish to think that now the details, playing through the thirds and, you know, formational changes and all this, you know, all this epistemic stuff of football. But at the same time, we've all got to get a grip. Like, me coming from education into football, like, education's miles ahead, Jazz. Like, it's so far ahead, it's scary. And let me explain why. In a teaching and learning context, the rigor, people's obsession with being on the grass, you know, there has to be a change. Now, we know, just so your listeners don't take what I say literally, if you've got a group 2 hours a week, of course you're going on the grass. If you've got a group 4 hours a week, you're probably going to go on the grass a little bit less, but, you know, mainly. If you've got a full-time program, which I've worked in, there's this obsession with grass, but not how we learn about what we do when we're on the grass. So meta-learning, you know, great for your learners to look up. You know, meta-learning is learning how to learn. Who's doing that? No one's doing that. So not in a rude way, they're not. You know, I don't say that in an arrogant way. They're just not doing it. So unless people start doing this and connecting with giving the kids a toolbox to learn, then teach football. So anyway, I'm probably going around the houses a little bit. That's the detail that should be happening in football clubs.
Sure, no, it's a great point. And I think not enough people do make an attempt to learn how to learn. And I think that often comes from, in my opinion, those that maybe are conscious about how they're learning, similar to the young man that you just mentioned there, you know, they're probably in a situation where they're being almost made to feel inferior because of the questions they're asking. Like, actually, no, I just want to know why we're doing what we're doing, because I'm like that myself. You know, for me, it's, no matter what it is, you know, if you're going to get me to do something, tell me why I'm doing it. So that, you know, if in the future I have to do something like this again, I understand the reason behind it. So I can make that decision for myself that actually, rather than coming to you, I'm just going to, all right, I know why I had to do that. So next time that situation comes up, I'm just going to go and do that because I know that's what it's for, sort of thing. Whereas if you never quite explain anything to me, I've always got a question in my head thinking, well, why are we doing this? And eventually I'm just going to stop doing it because I'm thinking, I don't see the reason for this. But if you give me a reason, you help me understand why I'm doing it, then yeah, I'm more likely to want to do it and off my own back as well.
So let's look at this. Sorry to interrupt you, but let's just touch on this, right? Let's look at the skill. Let's call this a skill to be able to say, Gaffer, I don't understand that. I do keynote speeches across Europe, across the world on mindset, leadership, behaviours, culture, whatever. I've got grown adults in conference rooms that are scared to put their hand up because they're a little bit, oh, flipping out. This is a bit awkward. Why are we not coaching that?
I think there's two parts. I think it's one, that element of it. But I think the other part is actually, when we're asking them or we're giving them a platform, especially in the first instances where, no, actually, if you've got a question, let me know. That thing, that piece itself is, you know, it's so maybe more common now than it has been in recent years. But actually, I've had plenty of situations where I've gone into an environment, I'm saying to the players or whoever I'm working with, right, if you've got a question, feel free to ask me. And I've almost got to kind of drum that point in again and again and again over the first few weeks, because they're not used to being allowed to ask a question.
Because we're joining up a bit here.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, and the norm is, right, you're not going to, you just have to listen to what I say and do what I say, and you can't ask any questions about it, even if it is just to clarify your understanding. Now, you know, I kind of go with this one, well, actually, where as the coach, whose responsibility is it for that message to be understood? Is it the player that needs to understand the message, or is it the coach that needs to ensure the message has been understood? Now, in my opinion, too many coaches give a message, are not sure if it's understood, and they crack on. And when the player or the athlete, whoever that is, doesn't get it right, then I say, well, we talked about that. Yeah, you spoke about it, but I never quite understood what you were talking about. And because your environment isn't where I feel comfortable enough to come and ask you about what you've spoken about, when I left in this, I'm over here and you're over here, we never quite come to the same point of understanding, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. My friend, really good friend, Harry Watling, who's at West Ham, we go for a walk at the moment in lockdown every Saturday. He buys me a takeaway coffee, believe it or not, because we can't get a coffee anywhere, and gets it delivered, and we talk life. And I was talking to him last week about black, white and grey, and simplifying language and just saying, Gaffer, that's a grey moment, particularly for foreign players where English is an additional language, particularly for inclusion purposes, speaking and listening. So, you know, teaching players the word grey would be a little great little nugget for your listeners. I think that it simplifies it. The next thing I was going to refer to was your first point. I'm sort of lost on that bit now. It was just around when we're creating a process of teaching and learning again around the grey moments. How do we get alignment and frequency between the coach and the player? Now, you've sat there and gone, right, and I see coaches like this all the time that say, yeah, ask me questions, but players still don't ask any questions. So there's a layer, and there's always the top layer. And then, you know, when I say about teaching and learning and the differences, teachers would have awkward silences, and they would delve and delve and delve and delve, and they would wait. And if they're not going to wait, they then scaffold questioning, and then they give the kids thinking time. Yes, when have you ever seen a coach give a player thinking time? And so I come across as this nutcase in football. But like, if people want my knowledge, they can have it. I'm giving it to you now for nothing. But you've got to go and find this knowledge. Now, I'm not saying you're going to go and do thinking time in the pissing rain in the winter because you need to get going, your sessions need to be fast-paced, blah, blah, blah. But maybe I sound like sometimes I'm crazy. Like, to me, this is what coaching and teaching and why they're different. You know, like just to summarise this, just because you taught it doesn't mean to say they learned it, which is exactly what you were, this is the thing I forgot. That's exactly what you were saying earlier.
100%. And I feel like there's so many times where, you know, certainly, you know, one of my recent roles working in coach education, working with coaching, they talk about, oh, yeah, we want our players to be able to do this, but they don't quite. I said, well, okay, right. The biggest problem I see is you've got so many coaches telling the players what they want to see. And that's fantastic. You've got clarity on what you want to see. But you don't have any clarity, or at least you haven't demonstrated that, in how you want them to get there. So if I don't understand how to get there in the first place, you're telling me where to go, I understand that bit. But if I don't understand how I get there and you can see that I can't get it, you need to give me some more information. You need to help me get that process right. Now, it doesn't mean there's one process that works. There could be many processes, but you need to give me a process or some reference point that I can work from to say, ah, I get it. I see how they're getting from point A to point B. I see the logical steps in between it. You know, so and you talked there about how coaching has moved on. And yes, it has. I think in some ways, I think it's moved on a lot, but also moved on in very different ways. So I think where it was probably when you were finishing your career and when you went through your coaching qualifications, certainly when I did mine, it was very much technical focused. Which I think, you know, we're lacking now a little bit, and it's become a lot more holistic, and I think that's fantastic. But I think a lot of people use the holistic idea to kind of shy away from actually some of the detail that is required, and that's probably where some of the breakdown comes in terms of providing that information and actually teaching the game in a way. And, you know, I guess I'm interested from your perspective then, when you're now working with those athletes, how much of that stuff there is important to you to kind of talk about when it comes to the technical aspects? Are you just solely focusing on actually their self-awareness? What are they thinking? What are they feeling? How are they getting through this? And what are the triggers and mechanisms that we can kind of work with to kind of overcome some of these things?
Firstly, obviously most people know me. I've managed in non-league. It was Jimmy Bullard's assistant manager, right? And I think that my super strengths, if I go back to first team football, will be, you know, number two, number three type person. I'm a good buffer for someone. I'm very strategic and very methodical. And people will know me, I mentor professional managers now, and my work is very strategic. You put me with a bunch of players these days, my coaching would be really average. You know, we've all got super strengths, and I think that my super strengths are not aligned with coaching anymore. I mean, I got wet, mate, for 17 years teaching PE, like in the rain, and I don't want to do it anymore. I don't love coaching enough to do it for a living. So that's my why, really, for not wanting to get, you know, soaked in the rain for a living. I just don't want to do it. It's not something I love. So I think that the players will come to me for a blended approach to development. I can tell them that they're not receiving the ball on the back foot and not playing forwards enough, and they're not forward facing. And, you know, if you're a forward, your final third entries are not good enough and you're not getting enough touches in the opposition's box. And, you know, the players will come to me with data and numbers and sprint data and distance covered and all these things. That's fine. And I think that data is really important, but data should give you as many questions as it does answers. So I think one of my super strengths is, because I have done everything in the game apart from strength and conditioning. And it's funny that I do. There are things I'm rubbish at. I don't claim to know anything about S&C, right? And anyone that says to me anything, I just don't know anything. The only thing I know is probably fitness and freshness. I love that term. I'll use that for my business CEOs, that where I say they're really fit, but they're not fresh. So you can steal that one as well for staff, because it's really important that staff feel fresh at work, and often they don't. So, yeah, really, my work is just very blended, and I can't answer it because it's very bespoke. You know, I'm not the person that's going to be going out there doing technical practices. I go and get someone to do that for me. So I mean, the agencies now have got, they've got people like me, they've got technical one-to-one coaches. So I'm the sort of person really that joins it all up, right, and then creates a plan for the player moving forwards.
Right. So then on that note, then you've got a player that comes to you now. What kind of things are you considering as part of that plan?
Well, that's all led on collaboration and led on self-awareness. They will go away and do the RAG rating. You know, green super strengths, amber's okay, red's area for development, and then we just work off the RAG. So it just depends where we're at, but you know, we've got a plan straight away. Now, the RAG isn't fixed in its form. It's very fluid, very methodical. It might be that I'm working on player with, you know, cognitive behavioural therapy, which is thoughts, emotions, behaviours. It might be that. It might be I do a bit of NLP with them. Whatever I choose to do, it's my work is teaching. I'm teaching these players how to get better. Now, I'm going to just touch on something you mentioned earlier. You mentioned teaching. But in education, we call it teaching and learning. And there's always this missing learning word in coaching. There's this word that just goes missing. Like, just because I taught it doesn't mean to say they learned it. And we're coaching this stuff. And they're like, right, well, where's the rigor? Where's the meat to the bone for these players? Where is the evidence streams that you can evidence that these players have learned it? Right. So I'm going to sidetrack slightly here. Well, Millwall, I brought in player reviews. And that's very common now. Player-led, core values, commitment, ownership, responsibility towards their own journey. And towards the end of my time there, I got told, oh, these aren't working. But that's where coaches, yes, are obsessed with outcome and not process. As if a 16-year-old's going to be good with a clicker and delivering. But it's not about them being good at delivering. It's about when they're 26, they can deliver with a clicker because they've done it 1,000 times. Sure. And football, in summary, is obsessed with outcome. And therefore, I suppose I'm going to shut up in a minute, I promise. But if we work backwards, and this is where young coaches probably need a bit of help here. It's very hard for young coaches to work backwards. because I haven't got the experience. Right, it's very hard. I remember starting lessons as a trainee PE teacher with my lesson plan in my pocket, thinking I cannot remember what's on my lesson plan. Yeah, I just can't remember what's on it. I used to have it in my pocket, or I'd have my formal lesson plan. I'd give it to my university lecturer, and I'd have it on notes and a bit of paper in my pocket. And when the kids were on task, I'd just be having a look, what am I doing next? Now, within reason, you don't have to do that anymore. So I think it's a lot easier to work backwards when you've got it in the bank. Right, I mean, I've worked with Abir Eze, I've worked with Junior Stanislas, I've worked with, you know, Championship players, Premier League players. So it's a lot easier for me because I've seen the end point. Mm-hmm. And then I can work.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Backwards, you know, I've also worked with thousands of players that haven't made it, right? So let's be real there. Then I have to reflect, if could I do better with these players? What have I done? So does that make sense? Like, you know, people, yeah, it's teaching learning is very grey.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess, you know, coming back to the, you know, top of the conversation, you talked there about your superpower, your super strength being strategy. So we're not going into an organization now. What are the things that I need to start to think about when I'm implementing a new strategy? What does that look like for you? You go into a new organization, you talk there about going into Millwall and, you know, bringing in things like the development plans, and that's become, you know, kind of a generic thing across the board now with the ECCC and things like that. So what does that look like when we go into an organization trying to develop a new strategy for the organization, and one that's going to support the players holistically, more specifically around the, you know, the social and psych stuff? What does that look like for you?
Before we do anything, and this is, oh, wow. I'm sure everyone's had a new boss, right? And the new boss walks in the door, and on the title of their office says, oh, I'm the boss. And they start making changes, and everyone's going, why are they making changes? It's a little bit like politicians. They come in and think they've got to make a change. And so, someone once told me a statement called change the people or change the people. So he goes into a building and he's got to change the people to get him on his bus. Or if they don't change, I change the people. Now, I'm not really having that comment. And the reason I'm not having that comment is because when you walk into a building, what you got to do before anything, I'm thinking of a school here, right? Got a failing school, and I walked into three failing schools. All right. And before you do anything, you've got to do a gap audit before you do anything else. You've got to talk to everyone. You've got to find out about everyone. You've got to everything it takes to be self-awareness, to be accurate of where you're at and why you're at. Now, the reason I don't like change the people or change the people, yes, in every building I've ever walked in, There's a third, a third, and a third. There's your top third that are always doing the business. There's your bottom third that are ineffective. And there's your middle third that are either doing it or not doing it. And often they're not doing it because they're not managed properly and they're not led properly. But what a lot of head teachers do, or a lot of leaders in every business are coming and go, nah, you lot ineffective, see you later. So that's why I don't agree with change of people, because actually they might be brilliant people. They just haven't been led properly. So I hope I'm being very methodical here for your listeners about the processes. I don't do anything other than listen, talk. Once we've got that embedded, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, genuinely not make any changes. I've gone into schools where staff think we're not doing anything because they don't see any change. People are like, oh, well, you're the bosses, you want change. No. We're going to be strategic with our change. We are going to highlight areas. When you change a school, I have to tell this story. We had behaviour, we had attendance and punctuality, we had safeguarding, we had teaching and learning, we had assessment, we had school culture, and we had community. So our seven aspects. That first meeting at one of my schools, we had a meeting at 3:30, kids had left. We were there, this was the first meeting, we were there till 11 o'clock at night. Right, with Venn diagrams, paper on the wall. What are we going to do tomorrow? This was a Thursday night going on a Friday. Most people would think we walk around school and we do X and Y, whatever. We're just around, we're visual. But that Friday, we all walked down the shops, knocked on the doors, apologised to the shopkeepers that are having their stuff nicked out of their shop. And we connected with our community. We got battered by the kids at locals. Your school driver is this, that, and the other. But at that time, we felt that we needed to hook in the school beyond the school just to say sorry. Me and you spoke off air about politicians. I don't want to bring this into politics. That's what I'm talking about, being authentic. Just say the word sorry. Just say, look, we're going to do our best to help you and our community. Now, that day, the teachers are probably thinking, what are you lot doing? You're not visual. You're not around. But when I say strategy, that's what I mean. Sometimes you've got to take a hit. Sometimes you've got to be, not keeping everyone happy. And then really the strategy is then looking at short, medium, long term. What we're doing in 6 weeks, what we're doing in two terms, what we're doing in three terms, you know, what we're doing in two terms time, but really then impacting what we then need to do. Do it on an operational level. And that's the key to football improvement, school improvement, business improvement. What does it look like operationally? And that's when you need great soldiers.
Mm. So just on that, the topic that you talked about, the first thing you're going to do is get to know the people, find out who's there, find out what they're about. What are the types of questions that you're thinking that you're going to, is there a list of or specific questions you've already got in your mind that I need to know the answers to X, Y, Z?
Not really. No, I think that would be, that would come across possibly as unauthentic and not real. You know, like if we're going to see the head chef, you know, head chef's one of the most important people in the school because she needs to know how many kids she's cooking for every day. Mm. So, like, everyone needs to be spoken to differently. So, no standard stuff. What you do, how are you, where you're from, how long you worked here. You know, like, for me, I don't, like, you know, like, you know, I don't have to script that. It's just me connecting. But a more strategic level, knowing everyone's birthday, knowing their partner's birthday, knowing their kid's birthday, knowing what makes them tick, knowing what their favourite hobby is. That's leadership for me, strategic.
No, they're brilliant. And obviously, now, if we're now looking at, you know, you bring in somebody's processes into the organisation, how long, you know, does one wait before they start to say, do you know what, actually, maybe we do need to change some of these people?
Performance management, so very strategic. So not off the cuff, not made up rules. Obviously, we will have an eye on operational. If, for example, and this is where leaders just get this wrong, leadership and management. I've got a member of staff that comes to me and the member of staff saying, they keep having issues with behaviour in the classroom. So I could see that as weak. Yeah, many people see that as weak. Oh, yeah, you've got issues. But maybe they just need help. So after I've put that support in place, once I've put that support in, so most teaching and learning development plans or most support plans for staff are 6 weeks. We go in and team teach, we go and support. After that support is there, we then look at capability. But we've got to put support in before we start saying change to people. And that's where football clubs, businesses, schools are still getting it wrong. Got to support your people. That's what leadership is. Leadership is to serve your people. But people are still looking at leadership as autocratic, I and me, instead of us and we.
And obviously looking at that, you know, to kind of look, delve deeper into it, obviously it's understanding the person to understand maybe what kind of leadership style might be best suited for them. So how important is that, you know, as a leader, then you're looking at the different ways in which you can support, you know, something you touched on earlier, when you're asking questions, they should present as many questions as there is answers. And the answers should hopefully present more questions. And that's much more about understanding or get into more depth around any of the context that you're looking at. So I guess from looking at an individual perspective, how important is it from a leader's perspective to actually understand, you know, I can't just lead in one way. I have to be
fluid. Yeah, of course. Listen, it's fluid. Fluidity is massive. You know, I call it like a river of water. You've just got to be fluid. You've got to connect. And like, we talk about differentiation in education. So we have to treat all the kids differently. It's no different for teachers. The problem with differentiating for the kids, yes, and with staff as well, is that you can be seen as inconsistent if you're treating everyone differently. And that's the difficult thing about leadership. So like, oh yeah, we've got a culture, but you're treating him differently to you're treating her. Very, very hard. And therefore, very, you know, you almost have to be very cute there as a leader, because you are treating everyone differently, but actually you've got to be perceived as treating everyone the same. So that's probably the greatest nugget I can share with your listeners, really, is that, yeah, you've got to be cute with that one, because you can't be seen as inconsistent. But at the same time, you have got to treat everyone differently. So, you know, that's, yeah, if you look at the difficult maverick players over the years, that's probably where the great managers get it right, don't they? The great managers manage to, yeah, enable the mavericks to get away with maybe a few things that they would normally do.
And just on that, you know, great opportunity for me to kind of drop in this one that I use myself. And I always say to the people that I'm working with, well, you need to, when you're working with a group of players or whoever you're working with, you need to create an environment where people are felt as if they're being treated fairly, but not necessarily equally. Because equally suggests that everyone requires the same approach, in my opinion. Whereas, you know, if it's fairly, like, okay, there's some parameters that we're going to work within, but it's going to be bespoke for everyone within those parameters. So how conscious are you then of maybe the social construction of the environment when now, I guess, approaching these situations, if that makes sense?
I think, again, it's about education. Like, education of people below you is massive. I said to an assistant manager of a championship club on Tuesday, over a 2-hour conversation, why is the sporting director not putting out informative videos to the fans and explaining what is going on in the football club and why it's going on in the football club?
From what perspective?
And therefore, say that again.
From what perspective should they be covering certain information?
To educate the supporters on the reasons why decisions are being made. The supporters are the lifeblood of football club. Why is there not a transparency from the top, middle and bottom? You're not going to reveal warts and all. That's what I mean. I mean, educating the supporters, this is our finances. We've got to sell this player because, and giving them clarity so we don't get the Twitter warriors. Why is that any different? Because it's about education. And the reason people behave inappropriately, or you haven't been fair, is because they're not given the education about why we're doing what we're doing. If you don't like it, I've explained to you, there's the bus and go on a different bus. But educating the people about our lens on the world as leaders, as well as your lens, and alignment between the two lenses to create harmony, cohesiveness, and what I call a truly great culture. And a truly great culture is how your weakest link feels, by the way, not how your strongest link feels. So I think that it doesn't necessarily answer your question, because it's a little bit hard to answer. You know, it's all in context, again, to your environment, your people, your current way. It could be a culture. My brother lives in Malaysia. You know, the culture in Malaysia is completely different to the UK. So he's having to learn that and understand that cultures can really affect behaviour.
So to link in what you were saying previously and what you've just mentioned there now, then you talk there about the culture is about how the least important?
Your weakest link, yes, the least skilled.
The weakest link in the environment feels. So in terms of that, you know, linking that to some of the strategy stuff that you've talked about, would you mind just going through some steps in terms of what you would do to develop that culture
to support everyone within it. And whether you're at the weakest link or considered being the weakest link, or whether you're the strongest link, and having that environment where everyone feels that they're inclusive in that.
I mean, this is really what my business is my business model is. I still can't get my head around schools are still doing teacher training on teaching, learning, assessment, safeguarding, but they're not doing any teacher training on group dynamics and how we create a we, not me culture. Football clubs, exactly the same. Businesses, exactly the same. Very, 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 very working around processes and concepts instead of actually creating the glue to connect people. So, yeah, I mean, there's all the standard stuff. I mean, America brought out something like 360 feedback in the 90s, where feedback was given from everybody and every angle. And the leaders were given angles, you know, the honesty of what the person on the ground floor felt. That would be one strategy. I think 360 feedback is highly effective in real high performance cultures because people just say how it is. The problem with 360 feedback is people don't like it because the people are telling the truth. And again, but I would only do 360. I've done 360 feedback in high performance places, not in low performance places. Use things like Johari Window, which is like a great self-awareness task, Lencioni model, which looks at trust, accountability, vulnerability, results. So lots of again, strategic changes, looking at performance management, looking at mentoring and coaching, looking at lots of feedback streams. So feedback stream comes through line management. So my middle managers need to tell me what's happening on the ground level through their line management meetings. That gets put in minutes. That gets put on systems. I then read this documentation to then find out what's happening at the ground level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
In big institutions where there's maybe different buildings, that has to be done. In a school, sometimes, yeah, again, that depends on the size of the institution. Mate. It's you know, it depends. Like, a lot of people say to me, football's trying to take business, but football's a lot smaller. At Millwall, we only had like 20 full-time players in the youth team and 20 in the 23s. So you don't have to work like that. You can be much more operational in a football club, actually. But people think, you know, yeah. So it depends. It just depends on joining the dots up. In summary, the size of the company or business depends on the style that you use.
Now, Steve, obviously, I'm sure there's so many more things that we can kind of go into and a lot of detail around it, because this space of design and a high performance culture in particular is vast. There's loads of little subtleties, and everyone's got different aspects on how they might go about doing that. So, from yourself to maybe other people working in a similar space, they've got different strategies and things that they've done and things that they've recognized that works for them based on their own experiences. So for you then, you know, just to kind of tail things off then, what would be some of the biggest things that you would be doing, or the most important things for you when you're going into that environment that you're looking to kind of make that change and shift that culture within the environment?
I got asked that question last week. I had a conversation about a job at a Premier League club, and they said the same thing, what would I do? I would listen in the first 6 weeks, as you know, wouldn't do anything, probably wouldn't send any emails, just talk to people, just connect. Then I'd be driving a culture of self-awareness. That would be my short, medium and long-term planning. Where are you at? What are you brilliant at? And can you be a 10 out of 10 of what you're brilliant at? Now, it might be on a strategic level. Like, I've got an under-14s coach that's brilliant with an under-9s coach, but the under-14s coach thinks if he goes up the rankings, then he's going to be more important. But it might be that the under-14s coach needs to know that he's the best under-9s coach. How do I then influence that under-14s coach to then say, look, you are the best person in this football club at under-9s? So, again, self-awareness, understanding people's why. I've got businesses now on their office wall. Everyone knows everyone else's why, yes. Some people's why is they want to be first team manager. Some people's why is they want to pay their bills for their family. Some people's why is they want to get home at 5 o'clock, so they want to be around their kids. Some people's why is they want to be slower on their journey. Some people's why is they want to go bang, 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 which you see a lot of young people wanting to do without doing the yards. So unless we get people's why, then I'm not able as a leader to firstly understand what they're trying to achieve, my lens is not their lens. I need to create alignment between where we're going. They need to get on the cultural bus. Yeah. So where we go in. And that's probably where, when we say change the people, like I have to ask them, not tell them, this is where we are going. What do you think we need to achieve? This is the direction of the leaders. You need to get on our bus, please. Yeah. You know, and I'm saying this not in a patronizing way, to model the language that you would use. Like, I'm not being autocratic at all. This is where we're going. I really need you to really get on our bus. We need your skills. So aligning super strengths, but aligning that comes from self-awareness. Self-awareness comes from knowing what I'm good at. As leaders, we then align all of the great cogs to make this process and this bus become more effective. So a very, I think, methodical approach. I think a holistic approach. I think a personable approach as well. And almost not being, you know, not taking any emotion out of it, but actually being quite methodical in our processes to make sure that, you know, like if there's a problem, you know, I say this to lots of businesses. Yes, this is the thing that comes back on the Scottish Pro license more than anything else. They say, Salis, I love that one. And I say, what's that? And they say, everything I say between 7:30 in the morning and 5:30 at night is always professional and it's never personal. I've got a chapter on that. I've got a chapter on that in my new book. If everyone said that, if you clip one thing from this podcast, do it. This is the one. Because if everyone just said that word at the start of everyone's journey in every job, it's always professional, never personal. Yes, me and you could have a ding dong, right? And we could perceive it one way, and you could drive home and go, Steve Salis, I don't like him. He said that. Well, actually, no. 6 years ago, I said every conversation with a professional. And suddenly, you got in the bank. This is what I'm talking about, strategy. You got in the bank, right? And then because we've got such consolidated relationships, you know, I have to share this. Dave Liverpool was my best mate in football. He's just the manager at Cardiff. Yes, we disagreed on stuff every day. Every day. And everyone kind of flipping out. Those two are quite fiery, but we're best mates.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, I think it's just like you said, you know, the boundaries have been set. The expectations have been set. Actually, this is not personal. And I think, you know, I can relate to that a little bit because in some of the stuff that I've done, and I've tutored in the past, and I'm quite direct with my approach when I'm a tutor. You know, I can be flexible in understanding different ways of thinking. But then if I, you know, one of the things you talked about, you know, when you're lacking some experience, you can't almost reverse engineer the process. You can only see what's in front of you in some ways. So based on my experiences and the way that I've learned and the way that I've seen other people deliver, right, you know, I've got a fair idea of how I think is the most effective and efficient way of working. Yes, there's different ways of working, but we only got access to you for a certain amount of time. Outside of this environment, I'm not really a resource for you unless you're reaching out to me. So I often ask, you know, learners that I'm working with, right, well, this is how what I feel would be the best approach. However, here's another way of doing it. So my approach is, right, I'm just going to be direct with you, unsolicited feedback around what it is that you're doing, because I believe that's going to take you out of here and put you over here as quick as possible. And you might not like the feeling of that, but I'm letting you know that's what it might feel like so that it's not come as a surprise. However, if you don't feel like that's an approach for you, that's fine too. But this is my recommendation and here's why. Now, the amount of people I've learned this over time, because before it was just unsolicited with no advance kind of warning or anything like that. And then I thought, okay, there's a bit of resistance here. But why? Because it's helping them. But now, you know, I've kind of shifted to that. Well, it's almost like a disclosure. This is my thoughts. This is what I think, and this is why I feel the way I feel. And now I'm getting more people saying, "Well, actually, would you mind doing it this way a little bit?" Okay, fine. But the amount of people that have then gone down this path where I haven't given them solicited feedback or the unsolicited feedback, and haven't given them the advance warning, initially their first thing was, "Yes, I'm not too sure about that, yes, guy." But actually, a few weeks later, those same people have come to me and said, "You know what? Yes, actually, what you did there really helped me."
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
And I can relate to everything you said there, everything.
Mm. And it's
very similar to my approach.
Well, but my thing is this is,
my job is to get you from point A to point B. It's great that you can go on so many different experiences within that, but in this context, my job is to help you become a better coach. Now, if I'm taking an approach which I feel is going to make that process longer, then I'm not being effective in my job.
Mm.
Because what's going to take you now 6 months if I don't say some of these things, we could solve within 2 weeks if I do. Because now the 6 months that you're going to, the following 5.5 months that you spend doing the work, you're actually doing it on the right track rather than finding the track to be on, if that makes sense. Now, yes, that's just my opinion and based on my own experiences, but at the moment, that's all you've got because I'm the one in front of you. So I think it's important that, you know, you do kind of have those conversations where it is giving that feedback. And I think it is, I think this is the key part. I was having a conversation with someone about this the other day, but the power of unsolicited feedback. And I think one of the key things that I'm going to take from what you've just said there today is that nugget of anything I say in this window is professional. It is professional. It's not, I mean, I don't gain anything whether you pass this qualification or whether you don't. I don't. But my job is to help you become better at what you're doing. And this is how I feel I'm going to do it. And these are the parameters I'm setting out to you in front. And I'm also giving you a door to walk through to say, actually, yes, I'm okay with that. Or actually, that door doesn't look that appealing, so I want to go through this one instead. But also explaining to you, what your expectations should then be if you go through that door instead. So,
and under that, underpin though, it's just what I talk about scaffolding. A lot of young people, London kids, street kids, whatever you want to call them, city kids, they haven't got that. They haven't got that emotional capability to be able to do that, right? So I think to the side of that, you need to be looking at behaviour for learning, which what you've just described, but not labelled it behaviour for learning, because it's not behaviour management. It's how behaviour impacts learning. End of story. I hate behaviour management. It's a prehistoric term. And the next thing underneath that is they need to get on the bus. If you need to scaffold a learning process and they're learning to learn stuff for them so they can learn to be able to be more effective. So I think that I agree. The expectation has to be set, but a lot of these kids can't get there. Then that's when you know, you need to be a chameleon or you need different staff, or you know, if you're doing it on your own, it's a lot harder. If you're doing it a lot on your own because you've got to be good cop, bad cop, very difficult.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say it because I often find myself when I'm delivering with someone else, I tend to be a bit more of the bad cop. And that's not just, you know, not in just in an education setting, but it's also when I'm coaching as well. If I'm working with other people, I tend to be the bad cop because I don't want the lines to be blurred. I've got clear expectations. This is what I want from you. And you may not like my approach. So I find myself, I don't know whether it's coincidence or, you know, I just gravitate towards working with people who want to be the more of the good cop. It's not that I don't, because I see the value in it. You know, you need that, you need balance in that respect. But, it's interesting because when I'm maybe a lead coach in an environment, I tend to be the bad cop. When I'm not the lead coach, I tend to be the good cop. So I don't know whether, you know, kind of in a roundabout way, maybe comes back to some of the stuff that you were talking about earlier, where you know, being a number two or number three, you're almost a sounding board sometimes. And I think when you are a sounding board, you have to be a bit more of the good cop, don't you?
Yeah. And in summary, again, I write this in my book. To be a good leader, a great leader, you've got to be a good follower.
Yeah.
And people miss that. People see leader and got a lead. No, you haven't. I could batter some football managers. I'm not going to do that today. We've had a really positive podcast, but like they just don't follow sometimes because they think leadership is I've got to make all decisions and like that. What's the point of having a leadership team or your assistant manager or you know? There's this all this. You know, we call it flat hierarchy. You know, there should be much more flat hierarchy at football club. You know, the players like turn up and they train harder because the manager turns up. That's weird. Why do they not train harder when the assistant manager turns up? What is that? That's only the environment and social science that's constructed those processes. Oh, managers turn up, we've got to train harder. But if everyone saw the assistant manager as equal, then the players would train harder. But like, weird. I just find that crazy.
Well, look, Steve, I'm sure we can go on for hours and hours about these things. Thank you again for your time today. And it's been a really enjoyable conversation for me. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of golden nuggets for the listeners to kind of latch onto. Just one final question that I did have for you. Obviously now, you know, now that we've finally got this one over the line and you're sitting here in front of me over Zoom rather, you know, you've almost self-inducted yourself into the coaches network. So what's one message that you want to kind of leave the rest of the network with?
I'm going to leave two, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Love everyone, hate no one. That'd be my first bit of advice to youngsters. Just keep loving, not hating. And then genuinely be we, not me. You know, genuinely be that person. Genuinely be that we, not me. Like that is the biggest bit of advice I can give everyone. Like, because if you've got that, people will open doors for you for life. Yep. What more can it get? It can't get simpler than that.
Well, brilliant. That's fantastic. Well, but Steve, just on a final note then, you know, like I said, it's been a very enjoyable conversation for me, and I'm sure it has been for the listeners and viewers as well. If they have any questions, either around anything that we've discussed today or beyond, whether that be something else that you offer outside of this, is there somewhere they can get in touch with you to do that?
Yeah, well, try and find. I've actually got that. Here we go. Somewhere. Here it is. Like that. There's my book, Educating Football. It's got a little picture of Ebiro Eze on there. It's playing for Palace, a player I work with since he was little. But yeah, solutionsmindset.com is my business. Get my book from there too. LinkedIn, Steve Salas. Twitter, at Stephen Salas. And Instagram is Solutions Mindset. So that's pretty much it. But thank you, mate. I've really enjoyed it. Us two could probably talk for about 10 hours on this development stuff. I've really enjoyed the conversation, actually. It's pushed me and nudged me into the right direction. I really hope that your listeners get a lot from it, mate.
Likewise. Thank you very much, Steve. Take care.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.